18th, 2020. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. I really appreciate you joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to also visit spingolaspeaks.net, and you can subscribe there, and also screeningsandyhook.net. And during the program, if you have questions or comments, you can send an email to comment@spingola.email. And I invite you to visit our very friendly chat room at spingola.chatango.com. You may view our past and current and future guest lineup at spingola.com. I keep magnificent records. I've got records and links all the way back to 2010 when I began broadcasting on RBN, and you will find everybody I've ever talked with, interviewed, and I've interviewed some fabulous, fabulous people, interesting people. You will find links to their websites. So it's quite a treasure trove if you're not busy, if you're while you're locked up, locked in, you might want to look at some of the people and listen to the programs. Anyway, I'm glad you're here today, and we have a wonderful guest who I dearly love, and we have we've talked before, visited before, and he is Christopher Fogarty, and his website is irishholocaust.org. His book is Ireland, 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It Perfect. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Deanna.
Yeah, we were supposed to meet at a book signing in March, and then all of this COVID charade happened, and it kind of shut, well, not just our books, your book signing down, and we were going to go out to lunch, and we're just going to have a wonderful visit with each other, and then everything changed. Everything just turned like upside down.
Let's do it anyways.
Let's do it anyway. I agree. Let's do it anyway. Anytime. Anytime. Without masks.
Yes. Very difficult to eat with a mask.
Oh, yes.
But I have sort of presented some basics that I'll refer to later. And they are, number one, Ireland's, quote, potato famine, unquote, is false. Two, Ireland was then, quote, owned, unquote, by English landlords who claimed ownership of all wealth created by everyone on, quote, their, unquote, estates. Three, the removal of Ireland's abundant foods was a major military operation involving more than half of Britain's then Empire Army. Four, the potato crop failed universally, but in Ireland there was an abundance of other foods. And five, the resultant mass graves that dot Ireland. The entire account is in my Ireland 1845-1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It, quote, perfect, unquote, available from me or from Amazon. Contact me at fogartyc@att.net if you live in the States. And if you want a copy in Australia, contact Jimmy Fury in Tasmania. His email address is jimmyfury@gmail.com. Or if in Ireland, get a copy in Ireland, contact the Irish Republican Brotherhood's John Robinson at johnrobinsonimports@earcom.net or Republican Sinn Féin at 223 Parnell Street, Dublin, or Niall McConnell at nilefmcconnell@gmail.com. So
okay,
that's the basic connections.
I'm sorry. I'm going to post this in the chat room so that people can have it and refer to it and make that connection. Everybody needs to read your book. I think it's imperative that people know what happened. And of course, in government schools, people learned or they were taught. They were taught that, oh, gosh, those stupid Irish people, they just didn't have any better sense and they starved to death. That is so not true. That is so
correct.
Not true.
Okay, well,
I'm going to post this.
Yes, I couldn't understand why they had starved, but nevertheless, that's what I was taught in school on both sides of the Atlantic, including in Ireland. But it just happens that back in the mid-80s, I was researching my grandfather's life. I've learned to be embarrassed to say, was a British soldier. He joined when he was 18 years of age in 1857. And until he retired in 1881, he was never used in Ireland. He was kept overseas, like most of the Irish soldiers in the British Army were. So I was researching his life at the Britain's Public Record Office in Kew outside London. That's K-E-W outside London, in their public record office. It is now called National Archives. And I was astonished to find that the regiment that he joined, the 40th of Foot, 40th Infantry, the Duke of Somerset's own, had been removing the food from South County Galway when my grandfather was a boy of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years of age. I was shocked because I had believed that it had to do, that the starvation of Ireland involved the loss of a potato crop. So I researched further and I found the facts. So I'll go back to item one. Why the potato famine, unquote, is false. The Ireland's abundant other food crops are shown in the book's Exhibit D. It shows the locations by townland and county of each, every separate one, of 1,984 grain kilns, 1,935 grain mills, 555 flour mills, and also butter and meat markets, 74 grain-using distilleries, and 136 grain-using breweries, Ireland's 45 woolen mills, indicating sheep and lamb, etc. The precise townland and county location of each of these non-potato food processors are Exhibit D2 in my book. So that's Exhibit 1 that is sort of covered. There was no potato famine. All of the other abundant food is marked by the number and location of all of the non-potato food processing mills, etc., in Ireland. In addition to that, we have the amount of food that was shipped out. But that's another component here that I'll be touching on later. So I'm hoping that in time, later on in the show, we might get some inquirers, some questioners, because I think the truth comes out better when people inquire, make questions. I like to be challenged. It's very helpful, I believe, in getting to the truth of things.
Oh, absolutely. Right. When you're challenged, then you have to come up with the details, which you have done in your book. But there are so many people that just... they believe that there was a famine, and they believe what they were told. And when you're taught something as a child, you readily accept things. And just because something is widely believed doesn't make it true. We believe a lot of things that are not true simply because we learned them as a child, and it stuck with us. And it's hard to get rid of some of those things.
By the way, it took me nearly a year to excise the word famine from my vocabulary. Regarding Ireland, it was very much on the tip of my tongue, and because it took, and particularly as we get older, I was already middle-aged before I learned the truth, and that might have made it a little more difficult than it would have been otherwise. But I found myself using famine, even though I knew it was very, very wrong, very inappropriate for this. This was a genocide. At the time, it was called Holocaust among writers at the time, including the Cork Examiner, now the Irish Examiner newspaper. Starting on the 4th of May, 1846, it was reported as Holocaust, 1846.
Okay. That's interesting. And I know that, well, of course, it's part of your book. That's part of the title of your book. And your book is titled Ireland, 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust, and Who Kept It Perfect. And
yes, and that last perfect is in quotation marks, you might notice.
Yes. I am one for details, and yes, it is in quotation marks. Amazing.
So it's like the perfect murder.
Yes, except it was much larger.
It was a perfect genocide, a perfect Holocaust. Yes.
Yes.
Tragic. And all those, by the way, the Marist brother who taught me and hundreds of others back in Castlereagh, County Roscommon, was asked in retirement, brother, well, he was brought my pamphlet at the time. My book was then a pamphlet, and it told the truth then about the 67 regiments. And I was pressuring my ex-schoolmates in Castlereagh, County Roscommon, to form a group and be the sponsors of a mass grave memorial over one of Castlereagh's four or five mass graves from the Holocaust. And they were all enthusiastic, but in a very short time, they became frightened. I never knew what they became frightened of. So he took my pamphlet to the brother who taught us all, a Marist brother, Brother Enda, and he said, I'm giving this to you to look over the pamphlet, and I'd like you to find any errors in it. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, and we'll find out what those errors will be. They were looking for reasons to not participate in any memorial because their quote, betters, unquote, did not approve of any memorials. They was left unmarked for 150, 170 years. So when he went back 2 weeks later, said, brother, what did you find? And Brother Enda said, so far as I know, this is truthful in all important respects. And the student, with a cheek that we never had when I was there, said, brother, how can you say it's true when it contradicts everything you taught us about the famine? And Brother Enda replied, I had no choice. I had to teach the curriculum as provided to me by the government. So that otherwise very, very hardworking, very, very committed teacher to us all had lied to his students throughout his entire teaching career, had covered up a genocide of his own people and the relatives of the people, of the students he was teaching. And all I can say is it's very strange for a religious person to lie throughout his career about something as important as genocide. And it also raises the question of what's with the Irish government? How can the government of a nation conceal a genocide of their own people? And they're committed to it. They are committed to the cover-up right now as we speak. In fact, until recently, and perhaps as we speak, there's a professor of Irish history touring the states trying to keep the old potato famine lie alive. And he's talking to Hibernians, the ancient order of Hibernians, to try to keep them au fait with the lie, keep them believing the lie. I have no idea why the Irish government is paying to have this done.
Well, I think that governments are pretty much the same worldwide, that they want to be in charge and they have to maintain their lies in order to control the people. And if it came out, and you've brought it out, but if people were to read your book, and they should read your book, then they would understand that, yes, governments do lie. And if the Irish government lies, and Ireland is a relatively small country compared to, say, the United States.
Yes.
So who's telling the government? Who is controlling the government? That is a big question.
Yes.
Who is controlling
the
government?
Yes. Well, I think I'm catching a glimmering now that while Ireland for many centuries was completely controlled from London, that there's a partial control from London to this day, but now the international deep state is controlling all.
Yes.
And they're everywhere. They're in the United States. I think we could say that the key members of the deep state are the neocons, who used to be Trotskyites, who wrote their white paper around just before and during the fall of the Soviet Union. And they're the ones, if you remember, who got us into the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and the subsequent wars.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Pearl and the Bush family, but most of them were dual citizenship, U.S. Israeli.
Yes, and it goes back quite a ways, even to World War One, with the Balfour Declaration and all of that. So yes, that's. That's definitely...
But the Bush family, as you say, the Bush family, they were, of course, part of the nearly half the U.S. American population at the time who were loyalists, did not favor the United States of America. They were part of the loyalists. Most of them, by the way, many of the loyalists fled the country, moved up to New Brunswick in Canada, and also to Bermuda. I've met people in Bermuda whose ancestors have fled the United States between 1776 and 1781.
Wow.
Yeah, and I must say they have not prospered since then. They would have better to have joined the United States of America instead of remaining loyalists.
Sure. Interesting. Well, we've talked about this before. I have Irish blood. I'm Irish, English, Danish, and German. And but my Irish ancestor came over prior. They came over in the late 1770s, kind of about there.
That was a great time to leave Ireland. The
yes,
Irish were truly on their knees
Ireland.
At that time, or should have been on their knees at that time. They had no legal personhood, which is a definition of, well, maybe it was a bit before that. No, it was at that time. It had been there always starting in Henry VIII's time and continuing forward. They had no legal personhood.
Right.
And that is the definition of the deepest of slavery, if you are not a legal human being. As a non-human being, you cannot sign contracts. You cannot vote. You have no control over anything. Anything done to you, you have no legal recourse, being legally a non-person. You can be robbed or murdered at will, and nothing can be done. The law, it does not affect the law. And that is the status of the Irish for centuries in their own country.
Wow. That
and they were brought. They were sent to the United States as slaves for a long time. In fact, at Newberry Library here in Chicago, I'd be hard pressed to find the book today. It's on the second floor that I went through once, in which the Irish slaves in plantations along the Quantico River in Virginia were not kept alive by their owners at all.
Right.
They were not fed or clothed or housed.
Worked them to death.
But Sunday was allotted to them to take care of all their material needs. Otherwise, 6 days a week, all of their time and effort was owned by their owners.
Right. I spent a lot of time at the Newberry.
Pardon me?
A lot of time. I spent a lot of time at the Newberry Library as well as National Archives, looking up a lot of these things and looking at primary records, which is what you've done.
Yes. By the way, I must tell, it's probably a good time to mention that everything in my book is from primary sources.
Absolutely.
Essentially, all of it is from the British government's own records. They're available to any adult, anyone who's not a child can go there, and they can access the public records. And there's no excuse for ignorance.
Chris, we do need to cut to a real quick break. We'll be right back.
Clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Christopher Fogarty, and the website is irishholocaust.org. Please do visit that website. There is a wealth of information there, absolutely a wealth of information. It's a must-visit website. Also, his book is Ireland, 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust, and Who Kept It Perfect. Now, right before the break, we were talking about primary records and secondary records. And I always use primary sources when I write a book. And primary sources are records that are created at the time of the event or shortly thereafter by someone who has personal knowledge of the event. This might be a birth certificate, death certificate. However, even if a death certificate contains the date of birth, it is not the primary source for that birth. Even if the date's correct, it's not the primary source. The primary source for a birth is a birth certificate. A marriage certificate is the primary source for a marriage. And family historians and other researchers should always use primary sources. Now, secondary sources are typically compiled sources, sometimes based on memory, speculation, circumstantial evidence, and every researcher, and you've done this, should cite their sources so that others may verify them by viewing the very same information. And without verifiable sources, people may regard the information as hearsay opinion or otherwise. It's hearsay. And people need to be able to go to your source. And you have provided that. And that's what I love about your work.
Well, thank you. Here's a little portion that is secondary, but it comes from, I think you could call him a good secondary source. Gustave de Beaumont was in Ireland in 1833. He had been in America earlier. It wasn't the United States at the time. It was the United States, mm-hmm. a fairly new United States. He was here with Alexis de Tocqueville, and the two of them wrote Democracy in America. They decided to each one to specialize in one of two books. They each edited and worked on each other's book, but one they allowed to be attributed to one and one book to the other. Democracy in America was attributed to de Tocqueville. It has never gone out of print. It was a bestseller from the beginning, and it never gone out of print. But the other book on which both worked, Marie or Slavery in the United States, was never translated into English until about 30 years ago. And it was a bestseller in Europe. It was written, of course, in French. These are two Frenchmen. And it's a sad story about slavery in the United States, but evidently the Americans do not want to know about it. And I think that we should learn our history, the good and the bad, and accept what is, and try not to repeat the ugly. In fact, one would have to say, perhaps it is our unwillingness to confront our past in the United States that we were so willing to go and do the same to the people of Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, etc.
Except I don't like to use the word we, because oftentimes... I didn't want to go and bomb people, strangers who hadn't done a darn thing to me.
Yes.
That's like, you know, if the government says, go over and murder your next-door neighbor, you wouldn't do it. But they say, okay,
right.
Go over and kill people in a foreign land. You do it, and you're a hero. But
yes,
if you murder your neighbor,
medals.
You're a murderer.
Yes, yes,
it's the same thing. Killing is killing.
Yes,
I'm very against war.
Somehow, if you can peg a person as an outsider, a foreigner, and particularly if you can get them into a position of being a non-person, you really got them. Then murder's okay. But here's one non-primary source, and it has to do with the 660 Englishmen who owned essentially all of Ireland. Their typical estate comprised of 25,000 acres. This is actually from primary sources. And a few exceeded 100,000 acre estates. But here's where it becomes secondary. Gustave de Beaumont, co-author with Alexis de Tocqueville of Democracy in America, described Irish land ownership thusly. The proprietor, as we've said, is often an absentee, an Englishman living in England. It often happens that he is unacquainted with his own estates. He knows vaguely that he possesses some 100 or 150,000 acres in the county of Cork or Donegal that is bounded on one side by the sea and on the other by the loftiest mountains perceptible in the horizon. Desirous of deriving from these possessions the greatest profit possible, he is also resolved to not spend a single farthing in improving their value. Here we go.
Yes. All righty. We will be right back. But that sounds like a primary source. He was there. He knew what he was talking about. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extend your life with Extendovite, a 7-herb combination made from garlic, cayenne, bilberry, hawthorn, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Each herb was chosen for their abilities to help improve irregular heartbeats, chest pain, lower cholesterol, as well as normalized blood pressure and clean and strengthen arteries, plus much, much more. Doctors have taken people off of some or all of their pills just because they believe their patients got better while taking Extendivite. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Christopher Fogarty. The website is irishholocaust.org. His book is titled Ireland, 1845-1850. You know, when I look at the title of your book, I get so emotional, because we're talking millions of people. And over 5 million people.
Yes. I must tell you that my life has been kind of blighted by learning of this. But maybe even more, maybe at least as much more, by the fact that the cover-up continues, that there are people today on payrolls and their full-time job is covering up that particular genocide.
Right, right. Why? And the religious people who were teaching this, how can they do that? How is it? Is their job that important? Is truth not valuable? What does that teach everybody? That it's fine to lie? And I just don't get it.
Yes, Mary and I have been in front of DePaul University, that insists upon teaching lies to its students about Irish history. And we rally there carrying our signs in at the front door of one of its buildings. I think it's on Seminary Street, around 2300 North, 2200 North. and it's beside a statue of Monsignor Egan. Monsignor Egan had a reputation as being so concerned about the poor that the church sort of banished him way out of Chicago for years until he got older, and then they sort of rehabilitated him and brought him into Holy Name Cathedral, and he became sort of an accepted leftist. He was considered a leftist. But Mary and I went to see him after the FBI started committing crimes against us, and we couldn't get a lawyer to take our damages case against the criminals after they had been proven to have committed crimes on two separate issues. Once they framed me for the murder of the Langard family in Winnetka, Illinois, people I'd never heard of in my life. And they locked Mary and me, my wife and I, up in the federal lockup downtown Chicago and tried to imprison us for the rest of our lives based upon what we're now discussing today. This is a genocide that the deep state wants to have hidden for some reason. And so but in that case, the FBI had to fabricate a piece of audio tape that was their sole evidence against us, the basis for our incarceration. And that was proven to be criminally fabricated by the FBI. We could not find a lawyer in America to take our slam dunk case against the criminal FBI for those two series of felony crimes against us. So the idea that America is now becoming a criminal state in these last few years is not quite right. It has been a criminal state that Mary and I can prove is criminal since the 1990s, since the early 1990s.
Back further than that. I think 1865 pretty much nails it down. But that's another story.
Yes. I'll continue with Gustave de Beaumont's observation of Ireland. He had said that he knows vaguely that he possesses some 100 or 150,000 acres in the county of Cork or Donegal that is bounded on one side of the sea, and on the other by the loftiest mountains perceptible in the horizon. Desirous of deriving from these possessions the greatest profit possible, he is also resolved to not spend a single farthing. By the way, a farthing is a fourth of a penny. In improving their value, he or his ancestors acquired the vast tract by confiscation, and who knows? But some new revolution may take away what the preceding revolution has thrown into his family. Close quote. But those landlords are no longer in Ireland. The British government, under international censure about the dire condition of the Irish people, bought out its landlords from Ireland between 1900 and divided among the Irish people, the tillers of the soil, and in typically 28-acre survival farms with an acre or two of the nearest bog for fuel. That's what we had. The golden handshakes given to the departing English landlords were so munificent that their amortization period was set at 68.5 years. Imagine a loan or a mortgage that anyone would get that is so large that in order to pay it back, the repayment period must be set at 68 and a half years.
Wow.
So that's where we were. So that is why my parents, like all other farmers in Ireland, were still paying off that old, quote, debt, unquote, into the 1970s.
So
Ireland was kept
gosh.
Poor. Ireland was kept poor until the mid-1970s, because even though the English landlords were gone, they still had to pay much of their, essentially all of the profit from their work on their land to pay off the old, what was given to the landlords between 1900 and 1910.
Wow.
So it's a kind of a dire story. And by the way, most people in Ireland today, I'm learning, are not aware that the entire nation paid, in addition to taxes on that land, we paid what's called, taxes are called rates. Rates were paid twice a year. But the debt to pay the old landlord off, that's a once-a-year payment. That was called rent, just like it was called when the landlords were there, rent. And the rents and rates were payable, the rates twice a year, the rents once a year. And we paid that rent up through the 1970s. I was long gone out of Ireland. My father was still paying it.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was paid in order to amortize the golden handshakes given to the English landlords. The same thing happened to Haiti after the French were pushed out by the local people, actually the ex-slaves. French gunboats went down there post-World War II and demanded and got annual payments from the Haitian government to pay for their own exemption from slavery. They had been slaves, and their owners had never been compensated for the loss of their slaves. And so the French government imposed upon them an annual tax that was enforced by French gunboats. In 1948, the payments began to be extracted. Crazy world. All of the English owners of slaves were also in the United States and in the wherever they had slaves. They were all compensated for the loss of their slaves. When England abolished slavery in 1832, I think it was, within a year or two of 1832, it's thought that the English abolished slavery at that time in order to help weaken the United States, to try and get the United States back into its control and power. That's debatable. It's an interesting idea.
It's always amazing to me
Hello?
About why. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. It's always amazing to me about why certain countries are especially targeted. And I mean the countries that were early on targeted. And I think what was so incredibly, shall I say, wonderful about the Irish that led to their being so viciously attacked. Now I know that certain things in countries are designed to force immigration meaning immigration from a country, immigration is to a country. But why did they want to get rid of all these people out of Ireland? Is because they needed cheap laborers in the United States, because many of the people, in addition to those who were captured as slaves, but they were sort of forced to come over to the United States, and many of them ended up in Manhattan working for corporations, the beginning of corporations there in Manhattan, where they lived in rat-infested buildings and had no... It was terrible. If you read about it, it was absolutely incredible, the lives that they lived. And if somebody got hurt, their arm got cut off in a machine or something, they'd be thrown out on the street with nothing. I just can't imagine.
I must say the 1776 to 1781 was a huge boon for the Irish. The creation of the new United States was an earthquake in terms of how much it changed conditions for the Irish. Even within Ireland, first of all, in the States, they were no longer slaves. White slavery ended in the United States. The slavery enslavement of white people ended in the United States upon getting rid of the British. And it was only except by a few boats, I understand, they almost gave up all slavery. That is the great pity that they did not proceed with that. But on the other hand, so many of the founding fathers owned slaves that I suppose it became impossible to enact into law. Thomas Paine was very much opposed to slavery. And as soon as the revolution was succeeded, the founding fathers got rid of him and forced him out. He went over and he wrote The Rights of Man and promoted freedom in France. And I must say, of the quarrel, and that's kind of what it is, between Edmund Burke and Thomas Paine, both sides have a lot to be said for them. Thomas Paine is seen today as the apostle of conservatism, and Thomas Paine something else, maybe a radical. I happen to have a preference for Thomas Paine. He promoted liberty everywhere, and I don't think you could call him a libertine like so many have become and are becoming now as we speak. But of the two, I think the American way, except for the slavery part of it, the American way is really, it took in an improved man's lot across the board. I have tremendous admiration for the United States Constitution and what it intended to do, to achieve.
Yeah. It's amazing when you look at slavery and who initiated it, who controlled it, the slavery after the so-called Civil War. It's just amazing. Slaves in the North were not liberated, only the slaves in the South. And a lot of people don't know that.
Wow, I did not know that. That is interesting.
And slavery actually started up North, and they had what they call the triangular trade, which was involved with sugar and rum, and yep. So they had a regular trade, and yes. And also the South was very dependent upon the North. They were very an agrarian society. They weren't into production. There were a lot they were growing cash crops. Cotton and tobacco,
yes,
those are cash
right.
crops. It's
yes.
It's like in Afghanistan, they're growing poppies
yes.
For deportation.
Yes.
And so that's their cash crop. And as long as they keep doing that and the U.S. keeps protecting it and promoting it and encouraging it and participating in it, we will be in Afghanistan, which is a totally different subject than what we're on, but still relevant. It's all about money, it's about greed, it's about resources, and the resources in Ireland was certainly the food.
Yes.
The food,
yes,
the land.
Yes,
and
yes.
Yes. And that's what it's all about, the earth's resources, and there's enough and to share. There's plenty for all, but there are some
exactly.
individuals who decide they want to have more than their needs.
Yes, and they had an army to do their bidding. By the way, these landlords in Ireland were simultaneously members of the British House of Lords in London and members of Parliament. And so they were making the laws in Ireland that fed into their own interests. And that partly explains the dire condition of the Irish for centuries. But I must say, even though all of this is factual, I'm hoping that no one will think of using it for any kind of political advantage today. This is all above politics. It is separate from politics. Partisan politics has nothing to do with what we're discussing here, I hope. And also...
Oh, no. This isn't a Republican-Democrat thing.
And nobody should consequently hate the English or think negatively of the English. It has nothing to do with any English people today either. In fact, there was a wonderful Englishman, William Cobbett. He was a farmer in England who rented land from an English landlord and paid a laborer to do some of his work. So that made him a middle-level agriculturist. And knowledgeable about the subject of agriculture. He visited Ireland in the 1830s, and he described it, and he wrote letters back to the various lords telling them what's going on. And in fact, his letters are compiled into a book, Cobbett in Ireland, A Warning to England. He wrote to various lords telling them about the crimes being perpetrated against the Irish people, how they're feeding England and feeding the English colonies, in fact, even feeding the slaves in the English colonies in the Caribbean, and the growers of the food are starving.
Oh.
And it's something. And he wrote to his own laborer in the same thing, that people are living in cabins in Ireland, not near as good as that for the pony that his laborer owns. And so this went on for a very long time. But that is no reason to hold anything against England of today. We can look at their current dealings and their current crimes, if you will, and blame them for what they're doing today, as we can do for any issue across the board. But there should be no historic hatreds at all.
Absolutely.
And if anyone
no
were to read my work and develop any kind of a historic hatred as a consequence, they wouldn't be reading the book properly. There'd be something
exactly
wrong with what they're getting out of the book, because this has nothing to do with
it. We do have to take a real quick break.
Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendovite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendovite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
The Republic Broadcasting Network late night premiere show The Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the red pill.
Welcome back. This is Tiana, and my guest today is Christopher Fogarty. His website is IrishHolocaust.org, and the name of his book, it's a must-read book, and his website is, you have to visit his website. Anyway, the name of the book is Ireland, 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It Perfect. It's primary sourced. It's just a wonderful book. Sad book, but one that needs to be read. Anyway, we were talking right before the break about. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Yes. Okay.
By the way, I want to thank you for that. That introduction to the book. But I must say, that website, I wrote it maybe 25 years ago, and have learned a whole lot since and have made a number of additional trips to London along with my wife, Mary. And the book contains a great deal more information than is in that website. The website is sort of a thumbnail sketch of everything, but it couldn't name all the sources, for example. The book is fairly complete. It's well footnoted and ended, which the website, IrishHolocaust.org, is really not. But anyways, the IrishHolocaust.org might serve as an introduction to the book.
Exactly,
Yes, but if a person were to read it alone, it really is only the beginning of understanding.
Right.
And there's no proof to it. It doesn't have supporting evidence, which the book does. The book is complete.
We want people to do both. We want you to go to the website and buy the book. How's that?
Yeah. By the way, because it's about genocide, my wife and I are quite happy to ensure that we will never gain financially from trying to be a witness to the millions murdered. Any income that's coming from the book to us, we're spending far more over monuments, over Holocaust mass graves in Ireland. In the next edition of the book, we'll be showing a number of other mass grave memorials. And I must say, each of them names the specific British regiment that stripped the area of that specific mass grave of their food products. And that might be why the Irish government does not welcome these memorials. I think it's the only possible way to memorialize, to provide witness to the people in those mass graves. The word is out so much that they were starved to death due to growing only one crop that I insist upon naming the specific regiments. There come a time maybe when it will be no longer to name the specific regiments, that it will be understood that it was a genocide. And at that time, I'd be happy with no longer having to name the regiment. But for so long as people think in terms of famine and potatoes, I think that the perpetrating regiments should be named for each mass grave.
Yes. We are at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.